Monahan and Sweeney made camp for the night in a little hollow, lush with Palo Verde, just thinking about bringing up some yellow buds. Sweeney shot a big buck jackrabbit for their supper and was skewering it on a makeshift spit when his talking muscles all of a sudden kicked into high gear again.
Oh, back at the Circle D, those hands yammered about you all winter.
Monahan put the bean pot on the fire and sat back.
They said how you knew the James boys. That true, Monahan? They said how you rode with Jesse. They said you rode with Quantrill.
Hog squirt.
Which? That you rode with Quantrill or that you rode with Jesse?
You just don't give up, do you, son?
Oh, no, sir, I don't.
I'm from the great state of Iowa, boy. And I fought for the Union. I think. If I'd ever run into Quantrill, I wouldn't have stopped to say howdy. That's for dang sure. I probably would have put a lead ball between the crazy man's eyes. And I wouldn't know Jesse Woodson James if he was to walk in here and ask for a plate of rabbit and beans. That was Brother Frank? That's another matter.
How'd you come to know him, then, if you fought for the North? Did you ride together? I mean, after the war?
Nope. The backstabbing, bank-robbing rebel coward married up with my second cousin.
That seemed to stun Sweeney into silence, and Monahan took advantage of the lull to give the beans a stir and add 4 pinches of salt and 3 of pepper. He couldn't stand flat beans. While he was at it, he adjusted the rabbit's spit, giving it half a turn. It was starting to get a little too done on one side to suit him.
It was a long time back. Reckon I've got over the worst of the mad.
Frank James is your second cousin?
Only by marriage. Don't you get to blaming that pestilential James clan on me.
Well, did you go to the wedding?
I should say I didn't. I was up to Minnesota when my old neighbor wrote me about it, and I was so disgusted I up and burned that letter right then and there. And I'm through talking about that rebel trash, if and you don't mind, and even if you do.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Well, just don't believe everything you hear.
No, sir, I won't.
And quit that sir business.
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, okay.
Monahan topped off his coffee and leaned back against his saddle.
When you was a kid, you ever play a game called Town Gossip?
No.
Well, Mrs. Fright, and she was the parson's wife up at our church back home, had us play it when we was kids. Teach us against the sin of repeating tales. It was a right good lesson, and I ain't never forgot it. She'd start out with a long line of young'uns, and the first one gets something whispered in his ear. Say, for instance, Sally went to town and bought a green dress. Something simple like that. And then that kid whispers it to the next kid, and so on, right on down the row. By the time it's gone through that long line, it end up, Sally caught herself a greased pig and barbecued it with old Mayor Woolard, or some such.
Well, I reckon it's a good thing you told me the truth of it, Dan. Hey, just to clear things up.
Maybe.
What about Bill Hickok, then? Or Clooney Portnoy? Or Arapaho Jones? Or Cole Younger? Or these Baylor boys that are following us? What about the Calicacs? Or Charlie Goodnight? Or Joaquin Morieta? Or
Joaquin Morieta? By gum, those boys surely did talk, didn't they? Joaquin Morieta was beheaded in the Golden State almost 20 years ago, boy. Back when California was a place where donkey-headed fools went to scratching the dirt for gold. Well, I suppose they wasn't all donkey-headed. Some of them actually found something.
Oh, but you've been to lots.
That's enough.
Monahan dug a hand into his possibles bag and pulled out his own dinged tin plate and a fork, as well as Blue's chipped bowl.
If them beans ain't ready, I'm gonna eat them anyway.
He scooped a soupy ladleful into the dog's bowl to cool. Blue eyed his bowl hungrily.
You just hold off until I say. That there's too hot, dogs. Besides, I'm gonna put some rabbit in it for you.
He turned toward Sweeney.
You got a plate?
Sweeney held out his dish.
Guess I know where I rank around here.
Long after Monahan was asleep, with the dog stretched out beside him, Sweeney stared up at the stars. Damned if it wasn't something, his meeting up with Dooley Monahan and actually riding along with him. He was Frank James's cousin. All right, it was a second cousin, by marriage to boot, but Sweeney didn't much worry about the details. He tried to pump Monahan for more information about the Baylor brothers and why they were dogging him. After all, if those mean no accounts were on Monahan's trail, he wanted to know the reason why. Not that he actually wanted to tangle with them, no sir. But it would be an interesting story to add to Monahan's legend. Sweeney was all for interesting stories. However, every single time he broached the subject, Monahan either changed it or ignored him. It seemed the old cowboy was embarrassed by talking about the Baylors. Any man who had done the things he had done and known the people he had known ought to be more convivial. Why, he ought to be downright eager to share stories. At least, that's the way Sweeney looked at it. He hoped Monahan would open up after they got to know each other a little better. Riding with a famous man who knew celebrated people and was sort of related to at least one of them was a long stretch from growing up an orphaned kid, kept practically a slave by fat old Fess Wattlesborg at his lonely place up in the mountains. Sweeney could picture the sign out front of the shack, "Hooch, Eats, and Trade, Wattlesborg's Road." The road was a narrow trail not wide enough for two horses abreast, and it was snowed in three-quarters of the year. Back then, it had seemed to Sweeney, still heartsick over the loss of his folks, that he could never clean the stalls right, nor did he rub down Wattlesburg's roan mare good enough to suit him, or cut enough firewood, or treat the customers right, when they had customers, for the rank mash Wattlesburg brewed, and the venison steaks he sold to trappers and the occasional passerby at two bits of plate, or in trade for pelts. Wattlesburg was a hard man indeed, fat and tall and strong, and nearly always drunk and looking for trouble. Sweeney had spent four long years, from the age of 12 until just after his 16th birthday, either bloody and bruised or curled on his pallet from one of Wattlesburg's punishments. Either that or facing up to a new beating. But come his 16th year, Sweeney had been blessed with a growing spurt, going from 5'6" to 6 feet tall in less than 8 months. And one day he'd finally owned the courage to hit Wattlesburg back. He guessed he'd been madder and Wattlesburg drunker than he thought, because the man didn't hit him back. When Sweeney up and slugged him, he went down in the straw in a very surprised 350-pound heap. And Sweeney had kept on slugging. Wattlesburg was still breathing when Sweeney left the barn. He supposed he'd given the fat man no better or worse than he'd ever gotten from him. Better, maybe, because the beating was administered with his own righteous bare knuckles instead of a rake handle or a harness strap or a club plucked from the woodpile, the instruments of punishment Wattlesburg usually favored. Worse, perhaps, because Sweeney had huffed and puffed and finally managed to drag the senseless Wattlesburg into a stall right up behind that old mare of his. The roan had obliged by lifting her tail and dropping a steaming pile of fresh manure right on Wattlesburg's chest, and she followed it up with a long, hot stream of piss. He guessed the roan had a few scores to settle with Wattlesburg, too. Afterwards, he took off through the snow on foot. Not the best idea for a kid whose breeches hit him mid-calf and whose sleeves didn't come close to his wrists. Not the best idea when it was still winter in the mountains and the snowdrifts were deeper than he was tall. But he hadn't wanted to steal Wattlesburg's horse and give the man a solid excuse to follow him. He had made it to civilization with a little help from a crusty old rock breaker who found him near the base of the San Francisco Peaks, half frozen to death and mewling for his long-dead mama. At least that was what the rock breaker had told him once he thawed out. Sweeney spent the next few years on the wander, sweeping floors and clerking, emptying spittoons and delivering telegrams. The pay wasn't much and the jobs were boring, but nobody tried to beat him senseless, and Wattlesburg had never come looking for him, leastwise not that he knew of. When he was 19 and working at Trimble's Mercantile up in Bonnie Fur, he all of a sudden got it into his head that he was born to be a cowboy. It was a dang fool notion. He'd never been close enough to a live cow to put his hands on it. And he'd never been able to afford a horse, let alone ride one. At least, not since he was 12. But he'd had an empty place in him, a vacancy created by parents gone to Jesus, or perhaps by those 4 lonely, aching years with that stinking pile of suet at Wattlesburg. That empty place had needed filling. Exactly 3 weeks later, Monahan had pulled him out from under that bronc. Oh, he'd learned to ride rope all right, but he hadn't filled the empty space. And since then, nearly 4 years of drifting hadn't filled it either. He supposed he'd always feel the hollowness. Sweeney turned on his side and studied Monahan and the dog. Monahan slept tidily with his arms folded over his chest, his hat pulled over his eyes, and the blanket all tucked in around him, neat as a pin. Not Blue. The dog had rolled over on its back and lay belly up, its feathery legs spread, its lower jaw and throat turned skyward. Its lips flopped back to reveal pink gums and teeth broken long ago, probably by some cow's well-placed kick.
If that ain't a picture of comfort, I ain't never seen one.
He'd never imagined Ray Morgan's old cow dog would go with anybody else, no matter that Ray was dead. Ray had told him Blue had wandered into his place a few years back and made himself to home. The Morgans never knew where he came from.
Yeah, bet that dog would tell a few good stories, too. Everybody around here's so damn close-mouthed, you'd think they was statues.
He camped here, all right.
Dev Baylor stood up and brushed at his knees, scowling at the fresh grass stains. Unlike his brother, he was careful about his clothes, and tried to keep them clean and pressed. A difficult task when a fellow was on the trail of a murdering, back-shooting coward. Keeping his duds tidy would be even more difficult when he finally caught up to Monahan. He imagined there would be quite a lot of blood. Dev paused to run a finger down one side of his well-groomed mustache, and curled his fingers to follow the line of the goatee, trimmed perfectly that morning, as it was every morning. The man admired himself above all else and didn't skimp on the self-grooming. Sweeping back a black duster, he cocked his fist on his hip.
Night ago, maybe 2. Hard to tell on account of all this grass.
Jason would have known.
Jason's dead.
Alf, by far the slower of the two, stood a few yards away, wearing a stained overcoat.
I knowed it. You don't need to go reminding me all the time. I'm still thinking it's a wolf. I'd like to see that. That Monahan all tore apart, screaming and such.
Something was intrinsically wrong with Alf's smile. Always had been. Even after so many years, Dev wasn't used to it. Probably never would be. Dev was thinking he never should have broken him out of that asylum back in Arkansas. They should have just left him there to rot to a ripe old age with 3 squares a day. After all, Alf said he had kind of liked it there. He hadn't been able to bear the thought of his brother in the loony bin and had busted Alf out. Back then, he had another brother to help keep an eye on Alf. Another brother, some Peckerwood cowhand named Dooley Monahan, had seen fit to cruelly murder while the brothers had split up, waiting for the uproar to die down over that unpleasantness outside Salt Lake. Now he was stuck with Alf, God help him.
Listen, Alf, it weren't no wolf, it was a dog. Them tracks are too round for a wolf. Plus which, the dog was here at the same time Monahan was.
Was too, Wolf.
And look here, see? Some of Monahan's boot marks are right up on top of that dog's, overlapping like. And sometimes it's vice versa.
What is vice versa?
It means the other way around.
You think you're real smart, don't you, Mr. Smarty?
Alf clenched his fists. Dev knew when Alf got like this, he had to be careful. He'd already carved up and killed their mother and daddy some years ago. The way the brothers had seen it, it wasn't that much of a loss.
Give me strength. Why, you would have seen it yourself, Al, if you'd been over here. You was just looking in the wrong spot, that's all.
Oh.
Let's move out.
Moving out, Dev hoped the dog stayed with Monahan. A man and a dog would be a whole lot easier to track than a man alone. His tracking skills weren't the best anyhow. He needed all the help he could get. Hand-to-hand fights, a little rustling, a little stage robbery, those were his strong suits. A hand-to-hand fight with a knife was the best. It stirred a man's blood, especially when he knew from the start he was going to win. Despite his less-than-superior tracking skills, it was the closest they'd been to Monahan. At least, he hoped it was Monahan. He hoped he hadn't got off the track somewhere, and he hadn't taken to trailing a whole different fellow entirely. It had happened about 6 or 8 months ago, up in Utah. When they'd finally found the man, they'd killed him anyway, just because they were so damn mad about wasting 2 whole months. Well, Dev was, anyway. Alf had killed him just for the sport of it. Far to the south, the dog waited patiently on a rocky creek bank at the bottom of the steep-sided canyon. The morning was clear and bright and crisp. The canyon was wide, and the creek was shallow and fast and sparkling. Monahan and Sweeney were only halfway down from the northern rim, carefully guiding their horses down a narrow ridge to the creek below. There hadn't been another way around, not unless they wanted to waste a day. Monahan and General Grant made it to the bottom at last. Sweeney and the strawberry roan weren't far behind. They reined in next to the creek.
Seems to me somebody real smart ought to build a bridge over this thing. I wouldn't mind paying a toll.
The dog stood up and wiggled his butt at Monahan. He sure was an eager cuss, all right. He made it down that slope in slap time and seemed to enjoy every minute of it like it was a game made up just for him.
Where was I? I mean, when I got interrupted by this here mountain we had to skitter down.
Ain't you tired of talking, boy? Seems to me you want to give your throat a rest.
He knew if they followed the canyon for about 4 miles, there was an easy place to get out along the southern rim. Another day in the saddle and they'd be at Tom Sykes's place. And the kid could use up his jawing at the other hands.
Go refill your canteen.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah. Sweeney walked up to the creek. Once the canteen was full, he returned to his horse.
Hey. Yeah. I don't know why you're still looking for these Apaches. And don't tell me you ain't. I got eyes, and I see you looking behind every bush. Carmichael figured they took off with half a butchered steer in their packs and leading a live milk cow to boot. Took the horses in the barn, too. 3 of them. They're halfway to Mexico by now.
Maybe.
In all truth, Monahan was more worried about the Baylor brothers at this point than the Apaches. He had one of those crawling feelings again.
Well, then why are we taking this roundabout way? We could have gone through a town or something by now, for crying out loud. I could have had me a beer.
Come on. This here's the straightest route to old Tom Sykes Ranch. You don't like it? There's a town about 20-some miles to the east.
Real funny.
Didn't mean to be.
As he had done all morning long, the dog raced out ahead of him. Earlier, Blue had spied a lone coyote and given chase, but Monahan had called him off. Coyotes were crafty. Sometimes one would lead a dog off, and all of a sudden that dog would find itself faced with a whole family of coyotes, just lying in wait to rip him up. A dog in that situation didn't stand a Chinaman's chance.
Well, I done told you about the time I was working in that saloon up to Kramer and shook the hand of Morgan Earp himself. Of course, he's not a real famous Earp brother. His brother Wyatt's a famous marshal over to Kansas or someplace. Could be Tombstone now, but that's only a rumor I heard. But Morgan's writ up in some of them dime novels they write about his brother. And I told you about the time I was working in that livery and held the reins of a chestnut mare for the one and only Daryl Duppa. Now, if you ain't heard of Morgan Earp, mayhap you heard about him. Duppa's got crazy.
That old gas bag.
So I figure now's about the time you ought to be telling me something about treacherous Ted Romanoff. Or Wild Bill Hickok. Or about the Baylor brothers, which have a pretty good chance of being on our trail right about now.
Monahan's eyes were searching the ground ahead. He'd lost the dog, couldn't spot him anywhere. Most like, he was around the next bend in the canyon. But the hairs on the back of Monahan's neck were pricking, and that wasn't a good sign.
They likely ain't following no more. Reckon you and the dog threw them off.
You change your mind on that every 15 minutes, Monahan.
Yeah, so do you. 1 minute they're murdering us in our sleep, the next they're somewhere up in Canada.
That at least was the truth. Monahan swore Sweeney talked just for the pleasure of hearing himself orate. He wasn't going to let this kid spook him about those Baylor boys any more than he was already spooked. He reined in the general abruptly and pointed to a cliff in the distance.
Man, what the devil you suppose that dang dog's doing?
Sweeney reined in Chili next to Monahan and looked in the direction his friend pointed. Halfway up a cliff face, Blue stood at an opening in the rock, either a full-blown cave or a wind-eroded hollow. Monahan wouldn't have spied him at all if he hadn't been wagging that shaggy butt of his like nobody's business. It was the only thing sticking out or moving, and his mottled coat tended to blend in with the surroundings.
Danged if I know. He's wiggling like it's another critter, though. I swan that dog scared up half the varmints in the territory this morning.
Monahan got that prickly feeling again.
Oh, cripes.
He slid his rifle from its boot. Sure as anything, the dog had found a den, either a coyote's or a cougar's, and Mama wasn't to home by the looks of things. But her babies were, if Monahan was any judge at all. He forded the rocky shallows of the creek and crossed to the other bank, stopping just a few yards northeast of the place where Blue's wiggling butt stuck out of the cave high above.
What are you gonna do? Shoot him?
Blue! Get on down here, Blue!
The dog turned around so his head was sticking out of the hollow. He whirled around again and showed them his tail feathers.
Dadgummit!
Since there wasn't any immediate danger, he slid the rifle home again.
Get down right now, you rapscallious villain!
You figure a cougar's got its youngins in there?
Monahan looked up the wall.
I'm going on without you. I ain't got time to shilly-shally, and I ain't getting no younger.
When Monahan started forward, Sweeney quickly followed.
You just gonna leave him in there with the she-cat coming back any second? Mayhap a wolf? How can you just leave him?
Oh, he'll be along.
Monahan figured the dog would just give up on whatever it had found and follow. So he wasn't surprised when not 3 minutes later the dog came galloping up from behind him. However, it did surprise him a good bit when the dog raced about 10 yards ahead and faced off the horses.
Okay, we'll stop.
We will?
Trust me, I don't want to go through this again.
Sweeney reined in next to Monahan, albeit reluctantly.
Dog, is this going to be a habit with you? All right, show us the way.
And I suppose I'm the lucky one who's going to have to climb up there after him, you being old and all.
After that crack, I reckon you're elected all right. All right, don't go getting yourself in an uproar.
By the time they were within 100 yards of the place, Blue was scaling the cliff. Monahan could see a steep path he hadn't noticed before. As they rode closer, he began to make out steps, crudely cut into the stone and worn by time. He figured the place to be an old Indian hideout, long deserted. At least he hoped it was.
I put a loop on him from here.
How long you think my rope is, anyway, boy?
Blue had disappeared into the cave entirely by the time they reined in the horses and Sweeney got down. He slung his rope over his arm.
If I get up there and I find a bunch of pretty kitties a-spitting and a-hissing at me, I'm gonna have that dog for my dinner.
I thought you wanted adventure.
I like hearing about it, not so much having it.
Don't worry.
Monahan pulled his rifle from the boot once more.
I see anything with fangs coming your way, I'll shoot.
Scowling, Sweeney began to make his way up the crumbling steps. He was about halfway up when he stopped and stood stock still. Monahan's eyes suddenly left the canyon rims, abruptly coming to focus on the opening above. The dog backed slowly out of the cave.
What the hell you gone and turned up, you mangy old cow dog?
Looking back at Sweeney, he saw that he was now slowly climbing higher. A short time later, Sweeney made it to the top and took a few steps toward the cave.
You ain't gonna believe this! Ah!
He disappeared into the cave before Monahan had a chance to ask any questions.
I said to leave! Go with me!
Sweeney emerged from the cave with his arms full of skirts and a blanket, and within them a flailing female figure.
Leave me go! Do it now, you side-stepping piss!
Oh, you close up that nasty gob of yours, mister, and I'll drop you here and now, all 30 feet down.
A pretty freckled face, surrounded by billows of russet curls, parted the blanket and took a look downward over Sweeney's arm.
Don't you dare drop me!
Monahan held back a chuckle as Sweeney made a slow and careful descent, with Blue leading the way and stopping every four or five steps to look up and check on him.
That's right, dog. Like you wouldn't hear him hollering bloody murder if he fell.
Sweeney finally reached the bottom of the makeshift staircase, and the lady wheeled toward Monahan, still seated on his horse.
Who are you? His daddy? This your idea of family doings? Riding after little girls and raping them? What'd he do, take turns holding them down?
I don't molest no girl children whose name I don't even know, Missy, or who appear to be too tender to spell it.
It's Julia. Julia Alice Cooperman. You want me spell it out for you?
Where the devil's your horse, Julie?
It's Julia, and I don't have one.
How in tarnation you get out here, then?
Had a horse. He up and died about half a mile due west of here.
You et lately?
Too proud to answer, he guessed. After swinging down off General Grant, he immediately searched around in his saddlebags until his fingers found what he wanted.
You like bacon?
He pulled out the last of it, just enough for a meal. Julia sheepishly nodded.
Butch, fetch us some kindling, would you?
Sweeney turned and walked back to the brush.
That there's Butch Sweeney. He's the one what saved your life.
That's real funny. He didn't do nothing for me that I couldn't have done for my own self.
You got water?
Course I do.
Sure you do. Just like you got a fancy sit-down dinner for six in your hip pocket.
Miss Julia Cooperman crossed her arms firmly across her flat chest, then sat down directly where she stood.
I ain't sharing my lunch with no dog.
Her statement only served to remind him that he and Sweeney ought to have something to eat, too. He turned once again toward his saddlebags and began to dig. They built a fire and had some lunch.
Got any more of that bacon?
Nope. All the bacon in the whole wide world ain't gonna do you no good now. Ain't no more of it, period.
I wasn't gonna beg.
I was talking to the dog.
Where are you fellas headed, anyhow?
Monahan and Sweeney looked across the small fire to the girl who couldn't be much past 13.
Sast.
Which is it?
Sast.
Monahan turned toward Sweeney.
West. Why the hell would we go any other way? She comes from the west and she belongs there. You said so yourself, didn't you?
I thought you looked familiar. You've been working in the store for Mr. Nils Gunderson. You busted up the saloon and been working it off in trade.
Yeah, that's me.
If you think I'm going back there, you're sore mistook. I never want to see that lousy excuse for a town again so long as I live. Been a lot done to me, and I done bad back when I had me a chance. But now I want a whole new life. Want it where nobody knows me, where I can start fresh without my uncle's reputation coloring the way folks act and what they say. Want to go somewhere fresh that's just starting out so I can start out with it.
And how you plan to earn your way whilst you're doing all this starting over?
Anything I can. Keep books or wait on ladies in a store. Work slinging hash or mixing drinks. I ain't even opposed to, you know, making my living on my back if I gotta.
Attitude like that's gonna draw the fellers in like bees to honey.
Oh, shut your pie hole, old-timer.
Who you calling old-timer, you baby she-cat?
Just like that, she pounced on him, letting loose with a barrage of unaimed and unanswered blows and kicks.
Don't you go calling me names!
Here, kitty, 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 kitty.
You peckerwood idiot!
More in order to save the young cowboy some face, Monahan climbed to his feet and stood over the girl.
But that'll be about enough, Miss Julia.
Grabbing the back of her shirt and the waistband of her skirts, he lifted her straight off, Sweeney. He planted Julia feet first on the ground and placed a hand on her shoulder. He held her away at arm's length, then twisted his head toward Sweeney, who by now was on his feet and looking pretty angry. Maybe not angry enough to kill her, but Monahan wasn't taking any chances. He stretched out his other arm and planted it in the center of Sweeney's chest, stopping him as he stepped forward.
Let me have at her. Just let me at her for 5 lousy minutes. Butch, ease up. She's just a kid. Yeah, she's a smart-mouthed, sassy little wench asking for a whipping kind of kid. Maybe you're right, Butch. But it's not up to you or me to decide. It's up to her folks. That is, if anybody claims her. Now, knock it off, the both of you, or you're both gonna see some whopping like you ain't never dreamed you'd see.
With that, he pulled them toward him an inch or so and then thrust them apart. Sweeney was unaffected, but Julia landed on her fanny in the weeds.
All right, damn it. Now let's get this lunch mess cleaned up and be on our way.
Sweeney stepped right up, getting his tin plate, utensils, and cups scrubbed out with sand, wiped down, and packed away. Monahan, who cleaned up after the dog as well as himself, was ready a few minutes later. The girl hadn't moved an inch.
Come on, Julie. Shake a leg.
Ain't going.
You ain't going? Why not?
Julia, you're going with us whether you aim to or not. Now get up on your feet and get cracking.
Said I ain't going. You can't make me. I know my rights.
And just what makes you think you got rights?
Mr. President Lincoln freed the slaves, didn't he? I figure that includes me, since I feel like a slave most of the time.
Don't matter a whit how you feel. You're a minor and a girl to boot. And it ain't Mr. President Lincoln. It's Mr. Lincoln or Mr. President, if you're talking to him direct. And Mr. Lincoln, or President Lincoln, if he ain't there, but you're just talking about him.
Julia shot a finger toward Sweeney.
What about him? He can't be more than 18.
First off, I'm 23. Second, you can call me Mr. Sweeney, or you can call me Butch. But you got no call to be saying a word about Mr. Abraham Lincoln, former president of these here United States and its territories, on account of he's murdered, dead, and buried. Understood?
Well, I don't think they would have buried him if he wasn't dead.
Julia lowered her finger but didn't speak. She kept staring at Sweeney, and it wasn't a happy stare, not by a long shot.
Come on, missy.
Monahan hauled her up to her feet. Monahan stepped up on General Grant and pulled his boot back from the stirrup. He held down his hand.
Come on, girl. We ain't got all day.
At last, she took his hand, although grudgingly, and climbed up behind him.
I ain't stupid. I know President Lincoln got assassinated at a play. It was our American cousin, and it was at Ford's Theater. So I ain't stupid.
Mm-hmm. And why are you telling me?
'Cause I ain't speaking to him.
That evening, they made camp later than usual. Monahan had wanted to get to a wide-open area where, if the girl decided to run, she couldn't get out of sight before they noticed she was gone. According to Sweeney, they were about a day and a half from the town of Iron Creek. Monahan was disappointed. He was in a toot to get to the ranch he'd been aiming toward in the first place, eager for the immediate prospect of money coming in on a regular basis, and eager for a cot to sleep on most every night. The business with the girl had him all knotted up inside. The nagging feeling that something bad was on its way and heading straight for him wouldn't go away. The next morning, Monahan saw that Julia was already up and just sitting there, looking at the fire that wasn't there anymore. When he got to his feet, he walked over to where Sweeney was resting and lightly kicked his boot.
I'm up.
Well, get a move on. Got a feeling we ain't got time to take breakfast. At least not here and now.
Why?
I just got a feeling, that's all.
Okay.
By full morning, they had moved on about 3 miles. Pleased enough with their progress, Monahan let Sweeney shoot a couple of rabbits. But he made them put another 4 miles under their horses' hoofs before they could stop and rest. As relieved and as hungry as anyone, Sweeney made a small fire as fast as Julia could tote sticks and quickly skinned, cleaned, and roasted the jackrabbits.
Yeah, they're ready.
Sweeney held out a roasted rabbit on a stick.
You got a plate for that?
Sweeney handed him a plate, then the roasted rabbit. Dooley took it and sat cross-legged in the grass beside him. He pulled out his pocket knife and cut the roasted buck or doe in half, and then in quarters.
Heads up!
He tossed one of the front quarters to Julia. He threw one of the back quarters to Blue before he let himself sink his teeth into the other. The juice ran down his chin.
Good jackrabbit, Butch.
He'd swear it tasted almost as good as those old cottontails back in Missouri. Now, why on earth had he thought of that? About the same time that Sweeney had a change of heart and a pang of conscience and began slicing up his jackrabbit to share with the girl and the dog, too, the Baylor brothers were riding into the meadow where Dooley and his crew had camped the night before. Alf thumbed back his hat and slouched forward, his forearms folded on the saddle horn.
Huh.
He stared intently at the ground before them.
What?
I was flummoxed.
Well, of course you are. You always are. What's bothering you this time, Alf?
Well, first we was following one man. Then all of a sudden he turned into two fellas and a dog. And now there's a kid with him. I just can't,
Fathom it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, Dad. Fathom. I like that word. Fathom.
Alf stuck out an arm pointing to the garbled story left by footprints in the earth.
Those look like a kid's tracks to you?
No. It looks like the tracks of a girl's shoe.
They were short and narrow, with too thin a heel and too finely chiseled a toe for a boy's boot. But why would that brother-murdering Monahan be carrying so many people, Deb wondered. He figured the other man must be good with a gun, and perhaps the dog was his. But now Monahan had added a girl to the mix?
I just don't get it.
Well, maybe she's a fairy. She could be a haunt, except haunts don't leave no footprints, I don't think. Do haunts leave footprints?
Come on.
Dev rode west out of the camp. Alf was right behind him.
But Dev...
Of course ghosts don't leave footprints. Did you ever see a ghost with feet?
I ain't never seen no haunt.
Well, then, don't bother me with stupid questions. We'll be stopping for lunch in about a half an hour.
All right, Dev. Good thinking.
But Dev didn't hear him. He was thinking. They hadn't lit a breakfast fire, which meant they'd cut out early and with a purpose. They were headed for Iron Creek. He'd lay cash money on it. Monahan had hurried them the rest of that day, hurried them to the point of exhaustion. But to his mind, it had been worth it. He couldn't see much of the town as they rode in, just that it wasn't much of a town. Naturally, Julia didn't say a word. At nightfall, he had taken over ferrying her, much to Butch's delight, and he swore it was like riding double with a big sandbag. But he'd been thinking she was acting the way he would have acted if he'd been in her situation. If he'd been just a little slip of a girl and all, and had been picked up and bossed around by Sweeney and himself, both of whom were bigger and taller than she was, especially with their boots on. He wondered who had legal charge of her. He'd never thought to ask. Sweeney stopped in front of a dark building, which by its scent and size could only be the livery. Monahan stopped next to him. Julia was the first one down from the horse. Monahan stepped down off General Grant. He rubbed the gelding's neck. Sweeney dismounted and walked ahead a bit, peering into the building's one visible window.
Don't look like nobody's to home.
Well, best turn them out into the corral then.
Monahan began to uncinch his saddle. He kept an eye on the girl, but it wasn't necessary. She leaned back against the corral's fence like she was nailed to it, which made him sorry all the more about just what exactly they had brought her back to face. A few minutes later, their saddles hung on the top rail of the corral.
Well, I reckon getting the gal home's the top of our list.
Well, let's think about that for a second there, Butch.
What?
We don't even know where we're taking her, first off. Second, it's near 10 at night and her kin's bound to be sleeping. And third, I say we take her to the hotel and get her a room. I'll pay for it, boy. Don't be looking so thunderstruck.
The girl smiled wide for the first time since their acquaintance.
I'm guessing you know where the hotel is?
She ran the two steps to his side and grabbed his arm.
This way.
Julia, does your Uncle Kirby know that you're out at all hours with these strangers?
The clerk squinted at the two men across from him. He turned up the lamp a little and took a closer look at Sweeney.
Sorry, Butch. Didn't recognize you. What are you doing back in town so soon?
Sweeney turned the big book on the counter toward himself. He took the pen from its well and signed Butch Sweeney, firmly and with a flourish.
Yeah, trying to rent a bed with a roof over it, Abner.
Sweeney handed the pen to Monahan, who took it, dipped it in the well, and signed his name beneath Sweeney's. In turn, he handed the pen to Julia.
She don't need to sign. not unless she's aged a few years since I last saw her.
Monahan handed the pen back to the clerk.
Butch and me need a double and a single for the girl.
With a pass-through connect, right?
You asking, do I want a connecting door to Julia's room?
The blenching clerk scuffled back. Monahan figured he must look more imposing than he felt. Either that or the clerk was feeling guiltier about something than he was letting on. The more he thought about it, Monahan put his money on the latter. He shot a quick look in Sweeney's direction and read much the same thing on his face. He figured he could push the clerk for more details, but it was late and he was tired. He didn't want to get into anything. Not at the moment, anyway. All he wanted, besides making sure the girl was tucked up safe and sound, was a soft bed and to be left alone. As he was mulling things over, the clerk slid two keys from their boxes behind the desk and pushed them toward him over the counter. Monahan picked up the one marked 2A.
Second floor?
Yes, sir.
Monahan nodded in reply, then handed the key to the girl. As an afterthought, he gave her his sidearm, making certain the clerk saw the transfer.
You know how to use this?
Yeah.
We'll be down to give you a chance at breakfast around 8 o'clock. All right?
Yes, sir, and yes, sir. See you fellers in the morning.
She looked at the clerk, who pointed toward the door beside the stairs.
To the left, numbers on the door.
She nodded and headed to her room, leaving the three of them, two tired and one terrified, standing in the lobby staring at each other.
Where's our room?
Upstairs, I reckon.
The desk clerk appeared to have been struck deaf and dumb, but mustered the strength to poke his thumb toward the stairs.
Yes, sir.
Sweeney started up and Monahan leaned over the counter.
That gal best be fit as a fiddle come morning. You got me, Abner?
Yes, sir.
Good night, then.
He followed Sweeney up the stairs. Across town, Sheriff Milton J. Carmichael sat in the saloon, nursing a beer. It had been a long day, a long week, come to think about it. Making it longer was Kirby Smithers, who had come waltzing into the office to report his niece missing. It would have been nice if he'd bothered to report it the first day she was gone. That would have been Tuesday, Carmichael reckoned, taking another long draw on his beer. The same day the posse finally made it out to the Morgan spread and found what those murderous Apaches had left behind. Carmichael looked up to find Butch Sweeney standing beside him and immediately frowned.
Ain't you supposed to be somewhere else? Like somewhere far off?
Oh, thanks for the welcome. Appreciate it.
Carmichael unceremoniously drained his beer and stood up, which put his nose directly level with Sweeney's armpit.
You stink like a horse that's rolled in a manure pile, Sweeney.
Beg your pardon, Sheriff Carmichael?
Carmichael opened his mouth, but closed it without uttering a word. It was too late, he was too tired, and he just plain wasn't up to it. He pushed past Sweeney and silently started the short walk toward home. Sweeney had waited until Monahan nodded off before he'd let his jumpy nerves take over and headed to the saloon. He helped himself to the chair the sheriff had just vacated.
Barkeep! Whiskey! I'll take a beer, too.
As the bartender walked back toward the bar, Sweeney raised his glass.
To Iron Creek. The town I hoped I'd never have to see again.
It went down the wrong way. Tears came to his eyes and he bent at the waist, hands flat on the table, when somebody began to pound him on the back without mercy.
Dagnab you?
He whirled around.
Dagnab me? Who you been hanging around with, Big Butch?
I'm awful glad to see you, Deborah.
I was beginning to think I'd have to get used to life without you. Sheriff Carmichael was just in here. Well, he was in here a minute ago. Anyhow, he said you rode off west with some feller they found out at the Morgan spread. Oh, those Apaches. They're so horrible.
With a sinking feeling he was about to be taken advantage of yet again, Sweeney pulled out the chair next to him.
Sit down, Deborah.
She grinned and quickly sat next to him. Without asking or looking, she raised an arm over her head and began to lazily circle her hand. It was a signal to the bartender. Sweeney knew the drill. The barkeep would serve her room-temperature tea in a whiskey glass, for which Sweeney would be charged a premium whiskey price.
Oh, none of that, if you don't mind. If I'm remembering right, it was one of those weak tea whiskeys that got me in trouble in the first place.
Yeah. I told you before, Butch, it was just that it's my...
Well, I know, Deb. I know.
He became aware of someone standing beside him. He turned and discovered it was the bartender with his beer in his hand.
That was fast, Emmett.
2 bits.
Sweeney dug a hand into his pocket for change. He found the right coins and placed the money in Emmett's palm.
Chatty as always, I see.
Sweeney took a long, grateful draw on his beer, then turned back to the girl, who was following Emmett's retreat with her eyes.
See, Emmett's still working nights. Mordecai ain't found nobody to replace him yet, huh?
Languidly, Deborah looked back toward him.
Didn't know he was looking to.
Well, she probably didn't, now that he thought about it. She'd always been a little shy on brains. In fact, he was surprised she was still working at Clancy's Saloon. Sweeney had been away nearly a week and couldn't believe Mordecai Clancy, that penny-pinching son of a shanty Irishman who owned the place and who'd been Sweeney's boss for the past 6 months, hadn't yet come up with another indentured servant to take Emmett's place.
Some people.
On the trail leading to Iron Creek, the two Baylor brothers arose with the dawn. Deb stoked the fire, took a piss, and rooted through the saddlebags for breakfast before he woke Alf.
Sun's up. Rise and greet the day.
Alf came awake and gave him a good-natured grin. Always Al's first lie of the day, Deb often thought. Then stepped a few feet away from the fire. Thank God he'd picked the downhill side, Deb thought with a roll of his eyes. He set their bacon on the fire, then started the biscuits baking.
You making coffee this morning, Deb?
I always do, don't I, Alf?
Almost always.
Jeez, one time, one lousy time in more than 15 years on the trail together. 8 years ago, on the morning of March 14th, I didn't make coffee because we didn't have any coffee. Somebody lost it when he was fording Arapahoe Creek the night before. Remember?
Slowly, the veil seemed to lift from Alf's eyes. Then, quite suddenly, he grinned.
Coffee's real important, ain't it, Dev?
Real important.
The bacon was cooking up fine. Carefully, Dev cracked open and added in the bird's eggs they'd found the day before.
When you figure we'll catch him up?
When we do, I reckon.
Them eggs ready yet, Dale?
Monahan woke slightly after 9 o'clock. Very late for him, figuring he could cut himself a little slack. After all, the last few days had been bone battering. He took his time inspecting his broken parts. By the time he made his exit with Blue, the sun was up so high in the cloudless sky it nearly blinded him. He started toward a small corral across the road, and then thought better of it and turned around to give instructions to Blue.
You find Julia, you best bring her to me, you hear?
Satisfied, Monahan turned back in the direction of the livery. From the front of the hotel, he could see several horses in the corral. General Grant waited on the other side of the fence, his neck stretched over the top rail as far as it would go. Ignoring him for the time being, Monahan walked up to the office of the stable and found a gangly, teenage, dark-headed boy waiting there.
Morning.
The boy stuck out a wide, bony hand.
Morning. Tommy Hawk's the name. I'm in charge whenever Mr. Pearl ain't around, that being most of the time. And you are?
Dooley Monahan.
He took the boy's hand and gave it a shake.
We come in late last night, and there weren't nobody here, so we left the horses in the...
In the corral, yeah. I figured they had to belong to somebody.
He poked a thumb back over his shoulder toward the interior of the livery.
Brought your saddles inside this morning. Ain't safe to just leave them out like that, not around here.
Monahan nodded. He'd met the law and was pretty sure the kid knew what he was talking about. He dug in his pocket for his wallet.
What we owe you so far?
Well, do you want to just leave them out in the stock pen, or are you figuring on a roof over their heads?
We got a good cross breeze.
Oh, sure. Each stall's got its own window.
Don't get your dander up, just asking. How much for a stall with a turnout 2 or 3 times a day? And water and feed. How much?
2 bits a day for each one. And we won't count last night. We'll just agree that you fellas rode in early this morning, all right? And we feed alfalfa hay, full-grain corn, and oat bran mash.
Sounds just grand, Tommy.
He slid a worn dollar from his wallet, loosening something else in the process.
Here's for today and tomorrow.
He held the money out to Tommy with one hand and thumbed free the scrap of paper from his wallet with the other. He recognized it almost immediately.
Alaska.
What'd you say?
Oh, Alaska. That's where I'm going.
Why'd anybody want to go up there? I hear the whole place is froze over practically the whole dang time.
No, it ain't. Says so right here.
Monahan held the clipping up, then farther away until it came into focus.
Says the climate is salubrious.
What's that mean?
Means it don't snow all the time.
He quickly stuffed the clipping back inside his wallet.
Didn't mean no offense.
None taken.
Thank God he'd found the clipping. Hell, he might have wandered around the Southwest for years without remembering where the heck he had set out for in the first place. He had no sooner said his piece and turned around when he spied a man across the street.
Monahan!
What?
I say, is you Dooley Monahan?
Who's asking?
Alf Bailey. And you gunned down my brother over cars.
Get inside and lay low.
Monahan had failed to notice the hotel's front entrance, a simple thing at best, where the door briefly opened, just a crack, then closed. On the other side of the door stood Julia, suddenly wide-eyed and shaking with terror.
Should we wait for your brother?
He'll get here when he gets here.
Now let's get on with it.
Alf went for his gun, forcing the old cowboy into action. The Colt slid easily from its holster, felt right in Monahan's hand. He fired at the very instant Alf did. They both missed.
Damn! Now you hold still, you liver-spotted old hop-toad!
Before Alf had a chance to accuse him of dodging and weaving again, Monahan opened fire, pulling the trigger for all he was worth. Every single bullet missed, although he put a hole through the post Alf was standing beside.
You out of lead, Monahan?
I am that. Don't suppose you'd mind if I took a walk over to my saddlebags for bullets?
Why? No, Monahan! You already had your shots. Used them all up.
Slowly, he lifted his arm and leveled his pistol at Monahan.
Now you're a dead man.
Monahan quickly hit the ground, scrambling quickly toward his saddlebags and the half-full box of ammunition he knew was there. But his old legs didn't carry him as fast as he wanted, no matter how strongly he willed them to. When the next shot came, he saw General Grant start bucking.
Damn you, Al Failer!
Monahan dug into his saddlebag, and miracle of miracles, his fingers landed directly on the cartridge box. Without further thought, he wheeled around, dropped into a squat, loaded the pistol, and took careful aim at Alf Bailer. But Alf had dropped his gun and was staring down stupidly at his wrist, which he cradled before him. Blood dripped down and spattered on the boards at his feet.
It's not fair!
What you talking about, fool?
Not fair! You sending some fancy trick dog out here to bite me? Mayor took off my hand, he did!
Blue?
Butch Sweeney stepped out of the mouth of an alley down the way. His rifle was out and pointed square at Alf Baylor's head.
You shot up, Dooley?
Nope!
Monahan silently thanked God his opponent was as bad a marksman as he was. Before he could form a word to ask Sweeney where the hell Alf's brother was, he had a face full of a wagging, wriggling, and licking blue dog.
You're under arrest, Alf. Stay where you are.
Once he finally got the dog peeled off him and climbed back up to his feet, he saw that the sheriff had taken Alf into custody. He was cuffed, anyway. One of the men who had been in the posse the other day, a deputy, Monahan was pretty sure, had taken possession of Alf's gun and was marching the shooter toward the jailhouse. The sheriff turned toward the crowd that had gathered.
All right, everyone, please go back to your business. The entertainment's over. Skedaddle.
He continued watching as Sweeney reached the mob across the street and had words with the sheriff. They didn't exactly look friendly.
Blue, let's you and me go see the General Grant. Darned if I don't half think you understand every word that's said inside your earshot, you old furball.
Blue and Monahan turned their backs on the crowd across the way. Monahan swung himself over the fence and walked toward General Grant.
How you doing, big feller? That nasty old Alf hit you with a lucky shot? Pretty certain he didn't do much more than surprise you, old son.
He reached up, gave General Grant's forehead a good rub, and then, with Blue standing out front and giving the general the eye, Monahan went over the horse, inch by inch. Up the street, Dev Baylor stood in an alley's shadows, angrily and rhythmically clenching and unclenching his fists as he watched his brother being marched into the jail across the road.
Damn idiot.
He'd known for years Alf was a bad shot, but he'd rarely had a chance to see him demonstrate the fact so publicly. There'd been nothing he could do to help him out. Alf had chosen a most public place to gun down Monahan, and there was paper out on both brothers. Dev had been forced to watch from the shadows and hold his fire, even though Monahan would have been a fairly easy shot, standing right out in the open as he'd been. The whole situation was just plain embarrassing, that's what it was. Alf had let Monahan take the chance to reload. That was inexcusable to Dev's way of thinking. Of course, due to there being a kink in the road, he hadn't seen that Alf was bleeding until the deputy hauled him off. Just what had happened to bring that much blood was another thing entirely.
Be just like old Alf to go and shoot himself now, wouldn't it?
But it wasn't the time to figure that out. It was time to figure a way to break Alf out of jail. Not that the concept had Dev exactly quaking in his boots. It was something he'd done countless times before, and one he would probably be called upon to do many times in the future. He looked across the street toward the sheriff's office again. The place was bubbling with activity. Well, for a little town like Iron Creek. He reached into his pocket, pulled out a ready-made, and lit it. The deputy emerged from the front door and assumed position to stand guard. The rifle was held across his chest, and his face appeared to be practicing a mean and menacing look. He wasn't very good at the last part. Dev moved back a little, but not so far that he couldn't see the sheriff's yawning doorway. If he held his head just right, he could make out the shadow falling across Alf's grimy trouser leg at the back of the building, behind a row of iron bars.
You never could do anything the easy way, could you, Alf?